Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 17th of October 2023. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Christine Hallett and Di Shaw and recorded at home by Christine Hallett and Claire Harvey. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:32 a.m. and sunset is at 6:07 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events in history that have happened on October the 17th. In 1091, Britain's earliest reported tornado struck London. The wooden London Bridge was demolished and the Church of St Mary-le-Bow in the City of London was badly damaged. In addition, over 600 mostly wooden houses were also demolished. In 1346, at the Battle of Neville's Cross near Durham, the Scots were routed and King David II of Scotland was captured by Edward III of England and imprisoned in the Tower of London for 11 years. In 1980, Queen Elizabeth II made history by becoming the first British monarch to make a state visit to the Vatican when she met Pope John Paul II. In 2012, Colin Farmer, aged 61 and a blind stroke victim, said that he thought he was going to die when he was shot in the back with a 50,000-volt taser stun gun fired by a police officer who mistook his white cane for a samurai sword. Born on this day, in 1912, was Pope John Paul I, who was born Albino Luciani. He was Pope from August the 26th, 1978, until his death 33 days later. His reign is amongst the shortest in papal history, resulting in the most recent Year of Three Popes, and the first to occur since 1605. Born in 1915 was Arthur Miller, American playwright, essayist and screenwriter. Among his most popular plays are All My Sons in 1947, Death of a Salesman in 1949, The Crucible in 1953, and A View from the Bridge in 1955. The drama Death of a Salesman is considered one of the best American plays of the 20th century. Born in 1918 was Rita Hayworth, who was born as Margarita Carmen Cancino, an American actress who achieved fame during the 1940s as one of the era's top stars, appearing in 61 films over 37 years. The press coined the term the love goddess to describe Hayworth after she had become the most glamorous screen idol of the 1940s, and she was the top pin-up girl for GIs during World War II. Died on this day in 1781 was Edward Hawke, 1st Baron Hawke, a Royal Navy officer who achieved a victory over a French fleet in November 1759 during the Seven Years' War, preventing a French invasion of Britain. In 1806, Jean-Jacques Dessalines died. He was a Haitian revolutionary and the first ruler of an independent Haiti under the 1805 Constitution, ruling until being assassinated in 1806. And in 1947, Joseph Bruce Ismay died. He was an English businessman, chairman and managing director of the White Star Line. In 1912, he came to international attention as the highest ranking White Star official to survive the sinking of the company's new flagship, RMS Titanic, for which he was subject to severe criticism. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
A nature trail with a twisting path and ancient woodland is inviting families to soak in its sights this autumn. The Hinksey Heights Nature Trail in the Vale of White Horse includes a 1.5-mile circular walk as well as a longer route that connects Chilswell Valley with Harcourt Hill, The Hurst and Cumnor. Parts of the valley are lined with boardwalks, and there are tables at one end of the trail for visitors to have a drink and a snack. Friends of Hinksey Heights member Nick Thorne said, "Autumn is a wonderful time to get your boots on and get outdoors." Many people think this is when the countryside goes to sleep, but it's a great time to get to know our resident birds a bit better, marvel at the amazing bounty of berries on the bushes, and start to understand the remarkable cycle of life that is taking place right under our noses. The reserve is an example of rare alkaline fen, a wetland habitat found mostly in East Anglia, Anglesey and elsewhere in Oxfordshire. Cycling is not permitted on the trail, and visitors are urged to keep dogs on leads and out of ponds. The trail is not accessible for prams or wheelchairs due to the nature of the terrain. More information can be found on the Hinksey Heights website.
Here is information about two local family-friendly events. Join tour to see Harry Potter film locations. Harry Potter fans can enjoy exploring the world of Harry Potter via a special tour of the film series' most iconic locations in Oxford. A unique walking tour has been launched by City Sightseeing Oxford to guide people through the wizarding world of Harry Potter during the October half term. The family-friendly tours will take in three university buildings and seven important filming locations which brought J.K. Rowling's successful fantasy series to life on the silver screen. Tour guests will be able to relive key moments from the films at the giant oak tree in New College, the Bodleian Library and the staircase cloisters, and Great Dining Hall at Christchurch. The tour lasts about 90 minutes and will set off at 1 p.m. on Friday, October the 27th, Saturday, October the 28th, and Sunday, October the 29th, from Christchurch in St Aldate's near Stop 7 of the City Sightseeing Bus Tour. Luke Marlin, Managing Director of the Oxford Bus Company and City Sightseeing Oxford, said, "The visitor economy is so important to the overall success of the city's economic health, and we are proud to offer another compelling tour to help attract people into Oxford. Tickets cost £15 for adults and £10 for children, with a special family ticket costing £45 for two adults and three children. Magical trail to see new attractions. Blenheim Palace has revealed its first details of its popular Christmas lights trail. The trail will run from November the 17th to January the 1st and include giant chandeliers, which organisers say will look like they've fallen from an invisible ceiling in the sky. Other additions include floating candles, neon singing trees, and a 40-metre tunnel filling with more than 700 homemade stars. There will also be an opportunity to sample festive food in the East Courtyard or purchase a spiced winter warmer. A contemporary take on the Sleeping Beauty fairy tale will await inside the palace for this year's indoor trail. The retelling of the story will allow visitors to explore transformed rooms like the Great Hall and the candle-lit bedchamber. Blenheim Palace is home to the 12th Duke and Duchess of Marlborough and is the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill. Tickets can be purchased online and there is a limited capacity with timed entry to both trails.
Protesters poured paint over Oxford's iconic Radcliffe camera to show their opposition to fossil fuels as part of a student stunt. Police responded to reports shortly after noon when a 21-year-old University of Oxford student and an 18-year-old man from Norwich, both representing the Just Stop Oil organisation, were arrested on suspicion of criminal damage. Some members of the public who saw the incident had strong opinions on the move, although others were less concerned. A man who works in the Radcliffe camera for the Department of Social Policy, Sherif Akil, said, "Just Stop Oil is about fossil fuel. Attacking such an institution doesn't make sense. It's pretty appalling." A music student at Queen's College agreed with Mr. Akil's sentiment, saying, "I would have thought there are more obvious places for them to target. They're targeting things that just aren't appropriate. It strikes me as an example of Just Stop Oil trying to get airtime rather than achieve anything. Police went to the scene of the protest after being called at 12:25 p.m. The last of the officers, an inspector and constable, left the Radcliffe Camera, which is part of the historic Bodleian Library, at about 1:30 p.m. Lily Baker, a student at Jesus College, said, "As long as it can be cleaned, I don't have a problem. I'm more concerned about whether they're a student and if something's going to happen to them. I'm pro the message." Another student at the Oxford College, Anna Basing, added, "No one's getting hurt and it's not inconveniencing us." A student of Nature, Society and Environmental Governance, Genevieve Beaufoy, said, "I think it's great. We support it. The building will be fine and the institution will be fine." Just Stop Oil stated that the action was part of a wave of civil disobedience by students across the country that started at Bristol University, then spread to the universities of Oxford and Exeter. Protester Daniel Knorr, who is a biochemistry student at Oxford and admitted responsibility for the orange paint, said, "Hundreds of millions of people will be forced to move from where they live or die due to climate breakdown. The only words to describe this are murder and genocide, and that's why I'm taking action. We are demanding that university leaders all over the country make a public statement calling on the government to end new oil and gas projects." Meanwhile, a woman aged 47 who did not wish to be named said, "There's just no need for it. If they want to stand in the street and tip a tin of paint over their head, then fair enough, but they shouldn't do it on a historic building." Work began to clean the paint off the building with jet wash hoses at about 4:30 p.m.
Oxfordshire surplus food charity, the Oxford Food Hub, is celebrating its 15th year serving the local community. Founders Robin Aiken and David Cairns started collecting surplus food from one supermarket in a car and taking it to five charities back in October 2008. Oxford Food Hub, which is based in Botley, has two warehouses, six vans and 90 volunteers who collect and deliver food to 200 charities and community groups across the county. In the last year alone, Oxford Food Hub saved 497 tonnes of food from landfill, enough food to make 1.1 million meals. The main mission of the charity, which changed its name from Oxford Food Bank in 2021, is to reduce food waste and the associated carbon emissions. It does not directly distribute food to those in need, but alleviates food poverty by distributing surplus items to local organisations. The number of charities registering to receive free food has increased from 150 to 200 this year due to the cost of living crisis. To mark the anniversary, an event for donors and supporters was attended by the Deputy Lieutenant, Lady Baker, Leila Moran MP and the Lord Mayor of Oxford. Chief Executive Officer Emily Smith said, "What we have achieved over the past 15 years is incredible. Hard work by volunteers, supported by a small staff team and funding from generous donors has enabled us to support thousands of people experiencing food poverty across Oxfordshire. We have a challenging few years ahead. The cost of living crisis is hitting people from all walks of life and across the county, so demand for food support continues to rise."
Oxfordshire County Council has been ordered to pay more than £35,000 to families of children with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND. It comes after the Local Government Ombudsman, LGO, found failures with the authority's school arrangements for SEND children. The council has been told to make payments totalling £35,850 to 14 families this year. The LGO found some children had suffered months out of appropriate education and noted delays in Education, Health and Care EHC plans. In one case, a woman suffered a mental health breakdown after her autistic son missed almost a year of appropriate schooling, the Ombudsman reported. She won one of the largest awards of £7,150 to compensate for the distress caused to her by the council's failings, as well as the negative impact of the lack of suitable education.
In another case, the parents of an autistic boy who missed a year of school were found to have been caused distress, uncertainty and frustration. This led to an award of £7,550. Last month, the council received a damning report by Ofsted and the Care Quality Commission into the widespread failings of the county's SEND provision. The fallout of the report led to the collapse of the council's ruling coalition. Damien Hayward, an independent councillor who resigned from the Labour Party following the report, said compensating families did not make up for the council's failings. Mr Hayward, whose son has learning difficulties, said, "The issue isn't about money. These families don't want money thrown at them. They want available and appropriate provision for their children. They want the access to education that their children deserve in order for them to achieve. The council has failed them." I talked to parents about this at the protest in November, and one said she just woke up one morning to find a large sum of money in her bank account. But it's not about money. Parents were essentially given money and told to go off and find their own solutions, but what they wanted was for the authority to have their solutions in place. Following last month's report, there has been a major reshuffle in the council's cabinet. Liz Brighouse stepped down as education councillor, and a new role was created for Councillor Kate Gregory, focused solely on the urgent action required by the report. Council leader Liz Leffman said, "We have quickly filled vacant cabinet positions and we are now rapidly focusing on the issues that matter to Oxfordshire people. Our priorities will be on rebuilding trust with parents and children, communicating better with them, listening to them, and delivering better outcomes for the most vulnerable children in the county."
Two short items about changes on local roads. New speed limits across Abingdon have come into force after a councillor apologised for the funereal pace of the contractor doing the rollout. The 20-mile-an-hour and 30-mile-an-hour road signs are all in place around the town and surrounding areas as the new speed limit just became legally enforceable. The limits will be 20 miles an hour in residential areas and 30 miles an hour on the ring road. Routes which will switch from 30 miles an hour to 20 miles an hour include Drayton Road, Marcham Road, Wootton Road, Oxford Road, Radley Road and Audlett Drive. New 20-mile-an-hour limits also apply in Cumnor, Farringdon, Forest Hill, Steventon and Woodcote. Meanwhile in Oxford, congestion issues caused by an experimental bus lane have led to it being coated with a layer of black paint just 2 months after it was installed. The bus lane at St Clement's in Oxford appeared over the summer as part of ongoing trials in the city, but was recently modified by Oxfordshire County Council. It had been approved in June, but changed following discussions with local bus operators. An Oxfordshire County Council spokesman said, "As part of the ongoing work to reduce bus journey times across the city, Oxfordshire County Council is trialling bus priority measures in the St Clement's area of Oxford. To provide as much inbound bus priority as possible, a bus lane was provided from Headington Hill through London Place and to the junction with Caroline Street. However, due to the outbound bus stops either side of Bolter Street and inbound traffic in the opposite direction, outbound vehicles were being blocked by buses picking up passengers. This created queues outbound. The council also found that vehicles exiting from Marston Road were blocking access to the bus lane from Headington Hill to London Place, which meant buses were struggling to make progress through the traffic lights. The bus lane has been changed to take account of these factors."
A family-run distillery in Abingdon, which began as a home and garage operation, has won an award for its whisky. Jordan Morris, owner of the Abingdon Distillery, said it was good to get recognition after entering the World Whisky Masters competition on a whim and receiving a silver medal for the distillery's first single malt whisky. Mr Morris, 35, only began brewing the distillery's single malt a few months ago. He said, "It was good to be given the award."
I've come from hospitality. I'm not a brewer, so it was a bit unexpected. I entered the competition on a whim. Someone told me to enter as a joke, so I did. It was good to get recognition and good to know what we've made is great already. We can only improve. The owner and head distiller, originally from Newcastle, told the Oxford Mail that his whisky had won the new make category. He added, it takes 3 years until a whisky can be called a whisky. The raw grains need a good amount of time in oak to get the flavours and develop. We've got 3 casks on site. This award was based on the raw new make spirit, and it came a few weeks before we started filling the casks. We made tweaks based on judge feedback, and other distillers gave me some tips, which I did for the first task. The distillery has launched a Whisky Founders Club, where supporters can get exclusive access to future casks. Mr. Morris added, people can follow the journey as the malt matures in the barrel. They can get a sample of it after 1 year, 2 years, and 3 years of maturity. There's more value in this membership too. People won't just be buying the whisky, they will also get pre-order access to single cask whiskies in future. We're going to be creating some really wacky flavours, including whisky left in a cherry brandy barrel. Founders Club membership guarantees people a bottle if they want it. The distillery also produces rum and gin. Mr. Morris said, we've had a really progressive, organic journey. We began as a home and garage operation back when I had a full-time job. Then a year and a half ago, I left the job and began working on the distillery full-time. We started with gin 4 years ago, and moving into the new site in Abingdon allowed us to start producing rum and single malt whisky. English rum and whisky is beginning to have its day.
More than 5,000 dahlias grown in Oxfordshire went on display at Stonehenge in homage to popular Victorian flower shows at the historic monument. The Stonehenge dahlia shows, held between 1842 and 1845, attracted crowds of up to 10,000 people who came to view the flowers, which were highly fashionable at the time. Dahlia shows were held for 4 years until the event moved elsewhere, leaving 180 years between then and thousands of blooms being brought to Stonehenge last week. The dahlias grown at Dahlia Beach in Abingdon were arranged into sculptures and a flower meadow by local groups. Dahlia Beach flower farmer Andy McDowell said, I'm incredibly proud to have supplied 5,000 cut dahlias and dahlia plants to English Heritage to celebrate a forgotten Victorian tradition, the Stonehenge Dahlia Show. In the 1840s, crowds of up to 10,000 people would arrive at the stones to gaze at displays of prize-winning dahlias and flower sculptures and also enjoy cricket matches and brass band performances. To highlight and recreate the spectacle of the Stonehenge Dahlia shows, floral sculptures, including a giant trilithon, have been fashioned by local flower-arranging clubs and professional florists. Not only were we asked to supply 4,500 cut flowers, but we came up with the idea of creating a meadow of blooms at the site's replica Neolithic village. It was the perfect opportunity for the hundreds of potted dahlias that we'd grown for the autumn shows, which then didn't come to fruition. It's been our biggest challenge to date, so it's just incredible to see all the hard work paying off. It goes to show that when one door closes, another door opens. There was also a traditional flower show featuring dahlias grown by local members of the National Dahlia Society at the site's visitor centre. One of these dahlias was crowned the Hero of Stonehenge in homage to the winning flowers of the same title in 1842, which is now out of cultivation. Louise Crawley, landscape historian at English Heritage, said the flower shows highlighted how the Neolithic monument played a part in people's lives long after it was built. She said, Stonehenge has a much longer afterlife. It is still in the background to people's lives all the way through. At that time, Stonehenge wasn't a tourist attraction. You wouldn't get hordes and hordes of people coming to visit. It was one of the main carriage routes and a local landmark, but no more than that. As the dahlia shows turn up, more and more people turn up. You could argue that it is part of the beginning of tourism at Stonehenge. Historians used local newspaper cuttings from titles including the Oxford Times sister newspaper, Devizes and Wiltshire Gazette, now the Gazette and Herald, to research Dahlia shows. In September 1842, the Devizes and Wiltshire Gazette described that year's show at Stonehenge. Such a scene of gaiety was never before witnessed on Salisbury Plain. Parties of gentlemen and elegantly dressed ladies were scattered about in all directions. Arthur Parkinson, a gardening writer, described how there would have been a smaller number of varieties of dahlia on display during the Victorian shows compared with today's offerings. I was so excited that English Heritage decided to tell the story of the Stonehenge dahlia shows of the 1840s, he said. I've grown dahlias for some time, and the heroes for me are the single and anemone varieties, which literally give life to a garden, brimming as they are with nectar and pollen for our precious pollinators. This year, 9 teams of flower arranging clubs put together sculptures featuring dahlias and greenery, including ivy and eucalyptus. These included an interpretation of the skyline across the Wiltshire landscape, a piece referencing the solstices at Stonehenge, hanging Indian wedding garlands, and buckets of dahlias. Salisbury Flower Club has completed a giant trilithon structure measuring more than 8 feet tall and 6 feet wide, which took 7 hours to create. London florist Sophie Powell also created floral crowns of dahlias for the show, referencing the large hats worn by Victorians. She said the dahlia had varied in popularity during the years, including the 19th century, but was now in demand again. In the past 7 years, especially the past 3 years, dahlias are the flower that everybody wants, she said. They come out at a time when the weather might be changing, so you can still have dahlias providing a really nice strong pop of colour in your garden.
Oxford has been named the happiest city in the UK. According to research by the savings platform Raisin UK, Oxford is home to the happiest people across the United Kingdom. The study used recent ONS personal well-being reports to measure categories such as anxiety, life satisfaction, and a does money buy happiness index. This was combined with factors such as average life expectancy and salary. Oxford topped the overall charts and had the highest score for life satisfaction and in the does money buy happiness index. It also revealed the city to have a life expectancy of 88.11 years, meaning Oxford scored highly in the ranking. The average salary for people living and working in Oxford is £35,448, which is slightly higher than the UK average salary of £28,567.
Here is an important reminder from the government and the NHS. Your health, your choice. You can choose where you receive care. Most of us have had the legal right to choose where to have our first outpatient appointment for several years, but not many of us know about it. You don't have to go to the hospital closest to where you live. You can make a decision based on how far you are prepared to travel, how long you want to wait, whether the location is near to family or friends, or how the treatment provider is rated by other patients and the health and care regulator. You can make an informed decision based on what matters most to you and your family. The right to choose covers a huge range of non-emergency conditions and includes both NHS hospitals and independent hospitals if they provide services to the NHS. Giving people choice about where to get their healthcare improves patient experience and has the added bonus of helping to make sure NHS resources and capacity are used as effectively as possible. During an appointment, GPs or other healthcare professionals can see information on the length of waiting lists and should share a minimum of 5 clinically appropriate providers with patients as part of the decision-making process. For patients who need more time to make a decision, the My Planned Care website at myplannedcare.nhs.uk is helpful for waiting times and hospital rating information. They can then book by calling the referral service helpline or go online. Giving patients a choice is important. GP Marjorie Gillespie explains how figuring out what is important to the patient, getting treatment quickly, close to home or work, and at a time that suits, is a vital part of the consultation. She said it's been recognised for a long time that if you give patients choice, they are more likely to attend their hospital appointment and more likely to be satisfied and have a positive outcome. If a patient does need a specialist opinion, we give them an indication of the choices that there are and give them a printout. They can go home, look up the hospitals, look at the options that are available to them and make a choice. It's interesting when you talk to people and say, well, these are all the places that you could go, because everybody imagines the only place they can go is their local big NHS trust. Dr. Gillespie, who is based in Essex, explained that patient choice covers a wide range of ailments, from knee pain to varicose veins and cataract surgery. It can also cover conditions such as asthma. She added, the important part is they're all NHS appointments, so patients are not paying for any of this. It's all about involving patients at the time that we're in the consultation, making that referral and showing them that they have options. You can choose to make health and care decisions based on the things that are important to you. This could be shorter waiting times, feedback from other patients or a hospital's Care and Quality Commission rating, or a location treatment based on where family and friends live who may be able to support you during your recovery. To find out more, go to www.nhs.uk/patient choice. That's www.nhs.uk/patient choice, all written as one word.
An Oxfordshire IT company has revealed how it has transformed staff well-being in a bid to inspire other firms to do the same. OXIT Solutions marked World Mental Health Day on Tuesday by encouraging other businesses in the county to embrace measures to promote a healthy work-life balance to boost productivity and well-being. World Mental Health Day is an annual campaign aimed at raising awareness of mental health and driving positive change. The Kidlington-based company was one of the first businesses in the UK to introduce a shorter working week. It also has an on-site gym, provides training opportunities, hybrid working and an annual team holiday. The raft of initiatives has boosted its team's mental and physical health. Chris Cope, director of OXIT Solutions, said, "Staff well-being is integral to our ethos. We're always striving to provide the best environment for our team to fulfil their ambitions, while also leading great lives outside the office. Over the last 2 years, we have implemented a range of initiatives to help make OXIT Solutions a fantastic place to work. We hope our positive experience encourages other businesses to give it a try." In 2021, the firm installed a fully kitted out gym in the office, complete with changing and shower facilities for its staff to use inside and outside of office hours. The following year, the team piloted a 4.5-day working week to see what difference it would have on morale. They introduced a 1 p.m. finish on Friday afternoons with no reduction to salaries. After 6 months and a noticeable improvement in well-being, the firm made it permanent. "We are all aware of the impact regular exercise has on mental health, so we wanted to find a way to help our employees meet their fitness goals without it eating into too much of their free time," said Mr. Cope. The on-site gym gives our team the flexibility to work out before they start the day, at lunch, or whenever is most convenient for them. Uptake has been fantastic. It's been really rewarding to see the benefit it has had on the team. The positive impact a shorter week has had was almost immediately obvious. Our team feel more valued, happier, energised and motivated, so it was an easy decision to make when it came to making the trial permanent. We're proud to have been trailblazers in Oxfordshire with this development in best working practices. The IT company has also committed to offering flexible working solutions to all its employees to ensure they maintain a healthy work-life balance and can work around family commitments. Although most of the team prefer to work in our office, we understand that doesn't suit everyone, so we strive to find accommodating solutions for all, said Mr. Cope.
Nursing home gets award as best quality in the area. A nursing home has been recognised as the best in the Oxford area at a ceremony. Barchester Oxford Beaumont Care Community in Bayworth Lane, Balls Hill, received the award at the Quality Business Awards as it was named the best nursing home in the area. The award recognises the home's excellence in customer service, quality products and services, and overall business operations. The Quality Business Awards are an annual recognition of businesses that demonstrate excellence in their field. The winners are chosen based on their reputation, customer feedback and overall performance in their respective industries. The care home offers a range of care options, including dementia care, residential care, nursing care, neuro-rehabilitation services, multiple sclerosis care, assisted living, stroke care and respite care. General Manager Shaju Paul is a qualified registered nurse, whilst the award-winning head chef, Roger Grimes, has been delivering food at the care home for more than a decade. One review from a family member said, "My grandmother has been in Barchester Oxford Beaumont Care Community since March and is very happy there. The home always has friendly staff and the food is excellent. Her room is always clean and tidy and the gardens are so well maintained and looked after. The entertainment staff put so much effort and energy into the activities each day, from live music to animal visits to National Beer Day. Generally, great staff who are very caring to my grandmother. Overall, my grandmother is very happy there." Another said, "The care my father received from staff and management, despite the difficulties caused by his dementia, was exemplary. He was treated with kindness and compassion. Everyone who comes here, even visiting family and friends, are always treated to tea and cake and made to feel like part of the Beaumont family. My mother, who now lives in a nearby assisted living apartment, enjoys her independence, but she is encouraged daily to partake in social activities and particularly loves the musical events, French lessons, knit and natter, and the regular outings in and around Oxford. Anyone looking for a kind and caring home for their loved ones need look no further."
Oxford United have successfully appealed against Stan Mills' red card against Bristol Rovers. Mills was shown a red card during stoppage time in United's 2-1 win over the Pirates on Saturday. The winger was dismissed for what the referee deemed to be violent conduct following a collision with Rovers' Sam Finlay in the 96th minute, moments after teammate O'Sheen Smith had received his marching orders. However, United have since submitted photographic and video evidence to the EFL and the card has now been overturned. This means that the on-loan Everton winger faces no ban and is now available for United's next game, which is at home to Blackpool on October the 21st. The highly rated 19-year-old has made a bright start during his loan spell at Kassam Stadium, scoring one goal and registering two assists so far. O'Sheen Smith was shown two yellow cards in the same game and will therefore miss the Blackpool match. Both sides ended with players sent off, with Giovanni Brown being the first to be red-carded after collecting his second yellow for the Pirates shortly after the half-hour mark.
Bid for letter by Einstein. Letters penned to a former Oxford University vice-chancellor are expected to raise more than £20,000 for Oxfam at an auction. Sir William David Ross, a Scottish philosopher, translator, First World War veteran and civil servant, was Provost of Oriel College from 1929 to 1947 and Vice-Chancellor of the University from 1941 to 44. He had an impressive address book and received letters from big names spanning the likes of Albert Einstein, Winston Churchill and Chiang Kai-shek. The letter collection was donated to Oxfam by the family of Sir William's daughter, Catherine Ross. Oxfam valuer Shelley Hitch said, "We are so grateful for the support of Catherine Ross throughout her life and for her family gifting us such treasured and important letters. The money raised will help Oxfam and our partners continue to fight the injustice of poverty around the world." One of two letters to Ross from Einstein was written from North Norfolk in October 1933 and is estimated at £4,000 to £6,000. Two type letters from Winston Churchill are estimated at £800 to £1,200 each, with one offering thanks for a copy of America, the Story of a Free People, which has been so kindly dedicated to me as well as to President Roosevelt.
Hundreds took to the streets in Oxford city centre in support of Palestine, with drumming, chanting and impassioned speeches. Around 300 people gathered in Cornmarket last night as Israel continued its attacks on the Hamas group, which controls the Palestinian enclave of Gaza. At least 150 Israeli hostages were taken into Gaza during Hamas's deadly attacks at the weekend that killed 1,300 people. Palestinian terrorists attacked civilian homes, farms and a music festival with children among the dead. More than 1,400 have been killed in Gaza in retaliatory airstrikes. The besieged territory is relying on generators after its only power station ran out of fuel, but Israel says its blockade will not end until Israeli hostages are released. The UN's World Food Programme described the situation in Gaza as dire, with food and water running out. Yesterday's demonstration was organised by the Oxford Students Palestine Society and Palestine Solidarity UK. Addressing the crowd, organiser David Hillman said, "We stand with Palestine, with the people of Palestine, with the whole of Palestine." Mr. Hillman, a member of Oxford Palestine Solidarity Campaign, told the Oxford Mail, "We need to stand with Palestine. We are here to call for an end to violence and an end to apartheid. There are people here from every community in Oxford. There are lots of Muslims and Jewish people here too. We are standing for international law which bans collective punishment, which is what is being dealt to the population of Gaza right now. By depriving them of water, food and electricity, hundreds of thousands will die. That's why we're calling for people to stand with Palestine with peace and dignity." Hamza Mohammed, a member of Oxford University's Palestine Society, said the gathering was about liberating Palestine and protecting the right to peaceful protest. He said, "Palestine has always had very strong local support in Oxford, especially as we're twinned with Ramallah. But this event is important because the right to protest has been eroded over time by our government, and that has included anything that shows support for Palestine." There was silence around the issue of apartheid in the Palestinian territories, and that's why we're protesting. The protest turned into a march down High Street and onto Cowley Road. Police described the protest as peaceful. Members of the Socialist Worker Group were also out in force. Member Ian McKendrick said, "We're here to support the rights of the Palestinian people. They won't be able to keep their machines running. They'll have no water supply either." Caroline Rain, Palestine Solidarity Campaign Treasurer, said, "We have to protest. Something has to be done. Otherwise, we're going to see an endless cycle of violence."
A partially sighted woman has accused the County Council of overlooking the needs of disabled residents with a controversial traffic scheme. The 90-year-old resident who uses taxis described how trips to medical appointments have become even more exhausting and more expensive. Since the East Oxford LTNs mean she can no longer take the old route, she told Lye Valley City Councillor Linda Smith the traffic calming measures have drastically increased her journey time to vital hospital appointments at the John Radcliffe. A decision on whether the trial of East Oxford LTNs will be made permanent will be made by the council's cabinet on October the 17th. In a letter shared on Twitter by Councillor Smith, her constituents writes, "Previously, to get to the JR, it would be Iffley Road, Magdalen Road, Divinity Road. Now, it's the Plain, St Clements and Headington Hill, or the Ring Road. Taxi firms charge more per mile on the Ring Road. My next eye hospital appointment is at 1:30, so I'll be leaving the hospital after 3:30 p.m. St Clements will be at a standstill, as all connecting side roads between St Clements, Cowley Road and Iffley Road are blocked, so all traffic has to go to the Plain. Alternatively, the Slade, Hollow Lane, which is also congested. Or I pay more to sit in taxis in a queue of traffic on the Ring Road, so a smug county councillor can pretend he is saving the planet when he is causing more pollution." She adds, "I expect LTNs will become permanent as the county can do what it likes in Oxford City." Councillor Linda Smith said she posted about this case because it is representative of the stories I hear from many, many residents on the doorstep in Lye Valley. She said they are tearing their hair out at the fact their regular journeys to access services or for work, childcare or other responsibilities now involve driving further on more heavily congested roads. The botched installation of the LTNs by the County Council has created winners and losers. Some people are benefiting from quieter streets, but residents in Lye Valley are suffering from increased traffic on boundary roads, which makes moving around the city by car or by bus much more difficult. Councillor Smith's post received huge support on social media. Christopher Boulay said, "I am partially disabled and cannot walk or ride a bicycle any longer, alas. I too have the same problem as this person who wrote to you. I live in Littlemore." Dr. Michelle Castelletti agreed, "The whole city is blocked and the most marginalised are the most vulnerable and or the most in need. It's a foolish, not brave move to try to make change without an infrastructure in place." Emma Gascoigne replied, "Heard of a lot of older people with similar issues and it is heartbreaking. And also people sitting in buses for hours because of the LTN traffic, which is daft as buses are the long-term answer." Tim Spanner said a blue badge holder exemption for all proposed ANPR-LTNS is the minimum Oxfordshire County Council must do. He said Islington, Haringey and Lewisham have set the precedent on this, so why the need to discriminate against the vulnerable here? An Oxfordshire County Council spokesperson said, "The future of East Oxford low-traffic neighbourhoods will be discussed by the County Council's Cabinet on October the 17th. This will include the decision on whether to continue with the LTNs. If the decision is to retain the LTNs, the Cabinet will also decide whether to implement automatic number plate recognition, ANPR, enforcement and associated exemptions, as well as other changes." A City Council spokesman said black cabs should not increase the charge for going on the Ring Road. Private hire operators set their own fares and these are available for the public to view. The overall fare could be higher when using the Ring Road due to the additional mileage compared to the city route, he said.
A 17th century Oxford hotel has won a national award. The Old Parsonage Hotel was named Hotel Restaurant of the Year South at the Food Awards England 2023 on Monday. The Food Awards England 2023 celebrates the best of the country's food industry. The hotel in Banbury Road is owned by Jeremy Mogford and is part of the Oxford Collection, which includes the Old Bank Hotel in High Street and G's Restaurant. The awards ceremony, held on Monday, October the 9th at the Birmingham Conference and Events Centre, recognised and rewarded the talent and hard work of the English food industry, highlighting the best restaurants, takeaways, pubs, cafes and producers. The winners were selected based on the votes of the public, who nominated their favourite establishments across various categories, including Restaurant of the Year, Gastropub of the Year, Fine Dining Restaurant of the Year and Best Street Food, amongst others. The awards aim to recognise excellence across various categories, showcase the best food establishments that England has to offer, and promote the country's industry, celebrating its diversity and quality. Last February, a portrait of Inspector Morse author Colin Dexter was added to the collection of paintings.
A range of up to 25 real ales will be available at 3 Wetherspoon pubs in Oxford during a 12-day beer festival this month. The Four Candles in George Street and the Swan and Castle in Castle Street, both in the city centre, as well as the William Morris in Poundway Cowley, will host the festival until Sunday, October the 22nd. The festival also features overseas brewers from Canada, South Africa, USA and the Czech Republic. The pubs will serve a number of beers not previously available, and among the festival collection are vegan and gluten-free beers. As well as featuring a range of different malt and hop varieties from around the world, there are also beers that include vanilla and cherries in their ingredients. The beers will be priced from £2.25 to £2.75 a pint. Swan and Castle manager Christopher Harrigan said the festival is a great celebration of real ale. It will allow us to showcase a selection of superb beers over a 12-day period at great value for money. It will also give our customers the opportunity to enjoy a number of beers which have not previously been served in the pub, including those from overseas. 3/3-of-a-pint tasters will also be available for the price of a pint. Tasting notes on all of the beers will be available in the pub as part of the festival magazine, and a digital version will also be available on the Wetherspoon app and website. All ales will be available to order at the bar or via the Wetherspoon app. There are a number of beer festivals in Oxford throughout the year. Last month, the Mason Arms in Headington hosted its 20th annual beer festival. Staff served around 40 different real ales, 10 ciders and 4 craft beers. The biggest beer festival of the year is organised by CAMRA, the Campaign for Real Ale, and is held at Oxford Town Hall. The Oxford Beer and Cider Festival 2023 will be at St Aldate's from Thursday, November the 9th to Saturday, November the 11th. Oxford CAMRA had decided to cancel its annual festival due to increased costs, but following talks with the City Council, it then agreed the event would go ahead.
The developers behind the proposed Botley West Solar Farm will review plans after an Oxford college pulled out. Merton College said last week that its Hall Farm site in Begbroke will not be used. The college said it now plans to plant extensive flower meadows along with nectar and pollen-rich species to support insects across the farm as a key part of its sustainability strategy. A statement on the college website explains, "Following further early-stage discussions, we have decided to continue with our existing approach to sustainability and biodiversity for our land at Begbroke, rather than including some of our land for consideration in the Botley West Solar Farm project. At this stage in our sustainability programme, we would like to give our existing strategy further opportunity to evolve before making any long-term commitments for the land. We can then take the time to judge the current strategy's success and explore any opportunities to evolve this at a later stage." It said the case for renewable energy is very strong and does align with our broader sustainability objectives, given the importance of solar power both as a tool to deliver net zero and also as a contributor to UK energy security. But added, "We are not the applicant nor the developer behind the Botley West project, and our land holdings equated to around only 5% of the total site area. We will continue to engage closely with all our partners to deliver long-term sustainability and biodiversity at Hall Farm in line with our vision." The controversial solar farm could span 3 sites, north of Woodstock, west of Kidlington and west of Botley. Its many critics say the farm on 1,000 hectares, 2,471 acres, will blight communities and destroy agricultural land. Botley West Solar Farm developers PVDP confirmed that land owned by Merton College, which previously made up a small part of the site on which we're proposing to develop Botley West Solar Farm, is no longer available to us. It said, In light of this change, we will use this opportunity to review our proposals for the scheme. This does not affect the viability of the project. We remain committed to developing a scheme that could deliver approximately 840 megawatts of renewable energy and make a significant contribution towards delivering energy security for the UK and achieving net zero targets. When we have reviewed our proposals, we will hold a second stage of consultation, the details of which will be confirmed shortly. PVDP said anyone with an interest in the project should register their details with them so they can provide information about future engagement and consultation activity as soon as it becomes available. A new cat-themed cafe is set to come to East Oxford. The McKitten Coffee Shop will lie towards one end of Cowley Road near the Plain Roundabout. It replaces Boss Chic Hairdressers that was next to Korean food store Seoul Plaza. Construction work is still taking place inside the cafe, though a few chairs and a stripy countertop can be seen through the shop window. Cat cafes have gained in popularity in the UK recently, following a craze which began in Taiwan. Customers can sit down to a coffee or refreshments and interact with cats housed on site. It's not clear yet whether the McKitten Coffee Shop will have cats on site.
Oxford United have published 7 images and a virtual fly-through of how the club's proposed new stadium could look. The U's are looking to build a new home at the Triangle, south of Kidlington Roundabout, with the club's licence agreement at the Kassam Stadium running out in 2026. United have plans for a 16,000 capacity stadium and complex, which is set to include a 180-bedroom hotel, restaurant, conference centre, health and well-being space and community plaza. The northern part of the building, next to the plaza, contains plans for a range of retail spaces, including a club shop, sports bar and restaurant. The new CGI pictures and video offer supporters the most detail yet as to what the club's proposed new ground could resemble. Chief Executive Tim Williams said, "With our right to use the Kassam Stadium coming to an end in 2026 and no option to renew the lease, we must find a new home. The club is committed to developing a proposal which is highly sustainable and community-focused, whilst providing a state-of-the-art destination for all. The further detail we have released shows how seriously we take these principles, and I'm delighted to share the first glimpse of our stadium with the whole of Oxfordshire. I hope everyone from Kidlington, the surrounding areas and across the county will come to the exhibition and take a look at the plans. We want to hear all your feedback." Oxford United will be hosting a series of exhibition boards at the Holiday Inn off the Pear Tree Roundabout until October the 21st, where the designs will be on show from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. There will also be Meet the Project Teams on October the 19th from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Members from the Stadium Project Team will answer questions. The release of the new images and virtual fly-through is the first step taken by United since the lease of the land at the Triangle was approved in principle by Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet at a meeting on September the 19th. The leasehold comes with several conditions, including the use being given planning permission from Charwell District Council and net zero being produced.
Kidlington will soon be overwhelmed by new developments, a councillor has claimed, following the approval of around 500 homes in the village. Charwell District Councillors gave the green light to 2 separate applications last Thursday, which will see 370 new homes built to the east of the village and another 118 built to the south. Opponents to the new developments have fiercely criticised the decision. It was described as the tip of the iceberg by Kidlington councillor Ian Middleton, who pointed to other developments that are already earmarked for the village and the surrounding area. This included 3,000 houses that have been designated in Begbroke and Yarnton, the £700 million Innovation District, Oxford North, and the potential new Oxford United Stadium, the land for which was agreed to be leased to the club last month. Mr. Middleton said, "The combined effects of all these developments on local infrastructure particularly transport, is likely to be overwhelming. He said the new homes would not be available for local families and would instead be used to cover Oxford's housing needs. It follows backlash last week when Oxford City Council said it would ask neighbouring districts to accommodate 126 new homes a year until 2040, on top of the thousands of new homes that the districts have already agreed to take on for the city. Mr Middleton said none of the so-called affordable houses will be available for local families, as they are being built to cover Oxford's housing needs, which they claim they can't meet themselves, despite huge swathes of city land being given over to economic projects such as Oxford North. The non-market housing will be under the control of either the City Council or the university, who wants to grab the majority of it for their own staff and students. Suzanne McIver, Secretary of the Harbord Road Residents Association, said the new developments would erase the crucial Kidlington gap between the village and Oxford. She said, "The problem is that the new houses aren't being accompanied by the infrastructure that is needed to protect our environment and to provide the services that residents, both existing and future, require. For example, the existing sewage network is inadequate and can't cope. So presumably we can expect continued discharges into the river network. Also, we anticipate that within a few years, residents will find themselves in a situation like Didcot, where large numbers of houses have been built and the GPs can't cope. We also have concerns about our hospitals, which already work at capacity for much of the time." The developers behind the new homes were contacted by the Oxford Mail to ask for a comment, but had not responded by the time we went to press.
A charity art exhibition and sale will take place at a church later this month to raise money for the homeless. The event, organised by members of Oxford Bury Knoll Art Group, is set to run from October the 26th to the 28th at New Road Baptist Church in the city centre, between 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on the Thursday and Friday, and 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. on the Saturday. Contributors can enter a picture and are asked to donate a minimum 50% of proceeds from the sale to the charity Oxford Winter Night Shelter. Exhibition organiser Jean Wicks commented, "I think it's appalling in 2023 we have so many rough sleepers. The autumn equinox is fast approaching with longer cold nights, but the number of rough sleepers is the same as in the summer." Please support Bury Knoll Art Group's attempts via their exhibition and sale of artworks to put a roof over a rough sleeper. The organisation will host local artist Kieran Stiles at the North Oxford Community Centre on Thursday next week from 2 to 4 p.m. as a preview to the exhibition sale. The Bury Knoll Art Group was established in 1948 at the Bury Knoll Library in Headington and welcomes anyone with an interest in art to attend its meetings and events. More information can be found at the group's website online.
Archaeologists have excavated an experimental World War II catapult that was designed to launch bomber planes into the sky. A team from the Museum of London Archaeology, MOLA, unearthed the prototype Royal Aircraft Establishment Mark III catapult at the Harwell Science and Innovation Campus near Didcot. The concrete remains have been recorded in detail and a 3D digital replica has been created. Susan Porter, MOLA project officer, said, "This fascinating structure reminds us of the rapid experimentation and innovation of the interwar years and the Second World War. Crucially, recording the location and appearance of every inch means that the catapult is preserved by record for future generations. This prototype was built between 1938 and 1940 at the former RAF base, with the intention to launch planes using shorter runways and loaded with more fuel. While the catapult never launched an aircraft, 3 years of design work went into the project. The catapult was made up of a large rotating turntable which directed aircraft towards one of the two concrete track runways that were just 82 metres long. To launch, the aircraft would be attached to an underground pneumatic ram using a towing hook. 12 Rolls-Royce Kestrel aero engines sitting underneath the turntable compressed air to 2,000 PSI to drive the ram. This high-pressured air was then forced into the pneumatic ram, which rapidly expanded to the length of the guided track, literally catapulting the large bomber planes into the sky. Unfortunately, the prototype had several problems, including the engines wearing out and the design not fitting the bomber planes it was meant for. The project was quickly abandoned, with the mechanism taken out and the structure filled in. By 1941, a normal runway was built across the end of the southern arm. However, it paved the way for other launching designs, such as the CAM system used in the early part of World War II to protect merchant ships. The archaeologists, working on behalf of Carter Jonas and Bidwells, have put together hundreds of photos and thousands of data points to create a digital replica of the Mark III catapult. The catapult has now been dismantled to allow construction works to continue on a new technology centre, which will be used by COVID-19 vaccine manufacturer Moderna. There has been opposition to the development, with a campaign group calling for the unique catapult to be preserved. But Harwell Campus has insisted it will honour the legacy of the site with heritage trails, artwork and memorials. Hundreds of fun seekers enjoyed the warm weather as they visited rides and stalls at Abingdon's Michaelmas Fair. The fair, which fills the length of Ox Street, is thought to be the longest street fair in Europe. With temperatures reaching 22 degrees centigrade, it was unseasonably warm for October, and lots of visitors decided it was t-shirt weather. Restaurants moved their food to stands in the street. Abdul Kabir, owner of the Prince of India restaurant, served up chicken curry. He said, "The weather is awesome. I've never known it to be as warm as this before." Michael Lammas of Coffee Aroma served food outside his cafe. He said, "We're serving wraps and stuff. The weather is very good. Everyone is enjoying it." The fair continued the next day, with stalls and rides removed overnight, so traffic returned to normal for Wednesday. By law, the Michaelmas Fair must take place annually on the Monday and Tuesday falling first before October the 11th in the centre of Abingdon, covering Ox Street, High Street and the Marketplace. The Michaelmas Fair and the Runway Fair began as a way to hire labour in the period after the Black Death in 1348, when the population fell by upwards of 40%, giving workers more power to seek work elsewhere. Skilled workers would carry the tools of their trade over their shoulder, while unskilled workers would carry a mop instead, which is why the fair is sometimes known as the Mop Fair.
Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday the 17th of October 2023. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Christine Hallett and Di Shaw, and recorded at home by Christine Hallett and Claire Harvey. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 7:32 a.m. and sunset is at 6:07 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events in history that have happened on October the 17th. In 1091, Britain's earliest reported tornado struck London. The wooden London Bridge was demolished and the Church of St Mary-le-Bow in the City of London was badly damaged. In addition, over 600 mostly wooden houses were also demolished. In 1346, at the Battle of Neville's Cross near Durham, the Scots were routed and King David II of Scotland was captured by Edward III of England and imprisoned in the Tower of London for 11 years. In 1980, Queen Elizabeth II made history by becoming the first British monarch to make a state visit to the Vatican when she met Pope John Paul II. In 2012, Colin Farmer, aged 61 and a blind stroke victim, said that he thought he was going to die when he was shot in the back with a 50,000 volt taser stun gun fired by a police officer who mistook his white cane for a samurai sword. Born on this day, in 1912, was Pope John Paul I, who was born Albino Luciani, He was Pope from August 26, 1978, until his death 33 days later. His reign is amongst the shortest in papal history, resulting in the most recent Year of Three Popes, and the first to occur since 1605. Born in 1915 was Arthur Miller, American playwright, essayist and screenwriter. Among his most popular plays are All My Sons in 1947, Death of a Salesman in 1949, The Crucible in 1953, and A View from the Bridge in 1955. The drama Death of a Salesman is considered one of the best American plays of the 20th century. Born in 1918 was Rita Hayworth, who was born as Margarita Carmen Cancino, an American actress who achieved fame during the 1940s as one of the era's top stars, appearing in 61 films over 37 years. The press coined the term the love goddess to describe Hayworth after she had become the most glamorous screen idol of the 1940s, and she was the top pin-up girl for GIs during World War II. Died on this day in 1781 was Edward Hawke, 1st Baron Hawke, a Royal Navy officer who achieved a victory over a French fleet in November 1759 during the Seven Years' War, preventing a French invasion of Britain. In 1806, Jean-Jacques Dessalines died. He was a Haitian revolutionary and the first ruler of an independent Haiti under the 1805 Constitution, ruling until being assassinated in 1806. And in 1947, Joseph Bruce Ismay died. He was an English businessman, chairman and managing director of the White Star Line. In 1912, he came to international attention as the highest-ranking White Star official to survive the sinking of the company's new flagship, RMS Titanic, for which he was subject to severe criticism. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.